This is the Inside Data Center Podcast. We talk to the people who power the data center sector to give you insider info on everything happening in DC today. Here's your host, Andy Davis.
Welcome to the Inside Data Center Podcast. Today I'm joined by Phil Lawson Shanks, Chief Innovation Officer at Aligned Data Centers. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, great to have you back on. Second time. I was looking before we came online because my timelines are always very poor. And amazingly, it was June the 18th, 2021, when we released the previous episode, which is amazed me. Episode 41, and now we're up to 160, I believe. So it shows how it was quite a while ago when we last spoke.
It was indeed.
Obviously, a lot has happened in that time period. So it's going to be good to look back. And always, there is always a lot happening with Aligned. So we're going to go through some of the recent activity that you have going on, focusing on some of the new technologies as well. Before we go into Aligned, as I say, it's been 3 years since we last spoke. Three years in the world of data centers is about 300 years, I think, in most other industries. So what have you noticed over that period? What's changed for you in the sector across that time period?
Well, it's just growth. And a lot of that was driven, obviously, by the global lockdown. We saw a tremendous spike. So historically, the sector has sort of gone through an 18-month cycle, where the biggest customers on the planet, the hyperscale, the cloud providers, they plan where they're going to go. They talk to people like us. We start looking at space. We build it. They start occupying it. And then it takes them a while to sort of grow into that. And then they start the cycle again. So the 18-month cycle, that's out the window now entirely. That's just gone. So I was looking at some of the stats. It was amazing. It happened just before we started talking on the last time. But if you look at how Teams has grown, just as an indicator, Teams itself, March 19th, 2020, it had 44 million daily active users. Just 42 days later, that grew by 70%. So the infrastructure they put out there obviously wasn't designed for that amount of growth. So that triggered a whole craziness for us and for others, enabling our clients to take more space, take more power, bring in more racks, load their systems up. And if you just look at that growth, from that point there, what was that? By the end of April, it was about 75 million daily active users. Now it's up to about 300 million plus every day. So that's just one indicator. So obviously there's lots of other applications that we've started using to be more collaborative, to do all of this remote conferencing, not only in the business sector, but the education sector as well. A lot of schools, they're all back at school now, but a lot of companies are still trying to pull their workforce back into the offices. And varying levels of degree of success in that regard. But what it means is, it was a sociological change. If you look back at and I hate to use the term, the boomer generation, but that's everyone who uses boomers, Gen X's, millennials. But that mindset of, if I can't see you working, you're not working. So you have to be visible to your management structure. There was they couldn't do that. So that trust has now been developed. So I think more companies are being much more relaxed or accepting of the fact that people work as they work, and different people have different work streams and workflows, and technology is the underpinning of that. I talk a lot about the industrial revolutions, and we're in the fourth, approaching the fifth. And if you look at all of those past ones, with the steam engine, the electricity, even the plow and the loom, they were technologies that changed society. They took away either some manual task, or they transitioned from muscles to mechanical, from intellect to electrical and digital. And we're seeing, I believe, that the data center is the engine of the fourth industrial revolution. What that means is it enables tremendous change, global societal technology change. And we've seen that huge leap in the last year with AI and machine learning coming out and just being made available. And again, that's changed everything again. So with that huge jump from you know, a steady state of growth, predictable growth, to then just bonkers, where we just needed to respond to a huge demand. And then it was starting to settle down a bit, and we were struggling with some other things as a sector, looking for power, looking for skilled labor to do the building, supply chain, which we actually were ahead of the curve on that, and we can talk about that later. But now with AI being released, GPT coming out, which triggered all of the other cloud providers and the people who are looking at machine learning, and I hate to use the word AI because it's not really AI yet, but that GPT clustering or GPU clustering, they had to release theirs. So again, that's sparked another huge growth. And that's a different type of model. The data center sector, you know, is transitioned from, you know, literally buildings that house mainframes, minis, PCs in racks, and the cooling and power infrastructure to deliver that is transitioned over time. And we changed that a lot when we started. We saw that there was a need to be scalable and to adapt to different workloads. What we're seeing now with the rise of GPU clusters, very different again, a lot more power required in a smaller space, and they generate an awful lot more heat. Fortunately, we've been working with high-performance compute for a while, so we have several instances, which we don't talk about our clients, so I can't tell you where they are and what they're doing, but several instances of high-performance compute that are running liquid to the chip, as well as air to the rack as well. So we've got machines that are running at 250 kilowatts a cabinet, next to machines that are running 50 kilowatts a cabinet with just air. So our infrastructure supports that. So we're seeing that shift and that change. What's really important about that, and I'll stop talking because I realize I've just talked for like 10 minutes, is when you start looking at liquid to the whatever it is, whether the rack, the chip, the tank, you still need a lot of air cooling as well. Because if you're just cooling the chip, there's a huge amount of technology in that infrastructure block that still needs air cooling. So it's just not one or the other. So it becomes this hybrid. So you've got to rethink how you design, how you build, how you support. There's a whole, it's enormous sea change. But equally, the enterprise business is growing as well. So it isn't like a switch immediately to GPU. Everything's just growing.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday about, they were an investor in the space, and they were saying about, are we building the data centers now that are for tomorrow, or are we building them for today? Because like you've just said, there's a number of different demands on these facilities. So what's your view on that? Do you think we're going to have kind of different data centers, so they won't become, you know, there's not just a data center as a broad term? I know there's differences in them now, but will the GPU side just be a different type of facility to the enterprise and the cloud?
I think it depends on who you talk to, honestly. We talk about our adaptive infrastructure, so we can do both really efficiently and really effectively. That low PUEs, all the things you want, low carbon, all of that. If you're focused just on high performance compute, then I think that's what you're going to do. And they'll probably end up being physically smaller boxes, smaller buildings with a lot more power coming to them. The problem with that mentality is because when you design something, it takes a couple of years before it's actually being used in anger, as it were. So to try and predict that far ahead, seeing what's happening with the chip sector. So if you look at let's take NVIDIA, because they're the darling of the GPUs. Their first iteration was 40 watts a chip. So you put 8 of those in a box, 4 of those boxes in a rack. And there's a whole bunch of other gear in there as well that brings that up to like 10 kilowatts a cabinet or plus. The current chip is running at 70 watts. The one they're talking about bringing up next year is somewhere between 1.2 and 1.4 kilowatts per chip. So if you're designing something for the H100s, that's not going to scale to the next iteration or the one after that or the one after that. And that's just one chip manufacturer. So there are a few out there doing this. So the what you need to do is have the ability to adapt and pivot and accommodate that growth. And equally, a lot of these companies, they may pivot themselves and they may say, great, I've got this space. Now I need to bring in some more enterprise class equipment around that. Maybe architectures will change. Maybe it'll move into a three-tier architecture like the old mainframes and database systems where you've got local caching and all that. You know, nobody knows. That's the trouble. So you've got to be very, very prescriptive in how you design and not just design for one solution. You've got to be able to pivot and change and adapt. Doesn't really answer your question, but that's the view.
No, it does, because I didn't expect an exact science of an answer, but it's definitely the insight from people like you that helps shape other people's opinions around what the future does look like. I think if we knew the answer, we would be very wealthy, wouldn't we? That's it. That's the reality.
We would indeed, yeah.
And you touched on it there with rack density and NVIDIA and GPUs, et cetera. And obviously, you recently launched DeltaFlow, which I was going to talk to you about anyway, and it kind of ties in quite well here. Obviously, the DeltaFlow technology probably was something that you were, again, you said at the beginning, a line seemed to always be a bit ahead of the curve. You must have been working on that for quite a while before it came to the fore, and then it's come to the fore at the right time, I guess. Do you want to give a bit of an insight into what DeltaFlow is and the impact it's having?
Yeah, absolutely. So in essence, we have a product called the Delta Cube, which is an air-based cooling technology. It's lots of patents, dependent claims. That allows us to really maximize the capacity of air, the air's ability to absorb heat. Really, once you get beyond 50 kilowatts a cabinet, you're sort of saturating the air with heat. We do a thing where we move the air slower so it has more time to absorb the heat. It's called the Delta T. But we can absorb much more heat because the air is moving slower across the surfaces. But again, you're sort of capped out at about 50, 54 kilowatts, frankly. To get beyond that, and because these chips are going to be much, much hotter, we need to start putting coolant directly on top of the surfaces. And there's different ways of doing it. There's cold plate, there's plate that sit cold plate underneath the surface, plates that sit on the chips. There's full immersion, lots of different ways. And our clients were asking us about that. Oh, as I say, we have some that do that today, high-performance compute. Basically, they bring their own CDU, their fluid distribution system with a heat exchanger. So there's the IT, there's the liquid to the chip side, which is a controlled fluid, very, very filtered. You've got to have things down to about anywhere between 25 and 50 microns of filtration. And to put that in perspective, 25 microns is the size of a white blood vessel. So really, really small. But you've got to think this fluid's got to go through all these different pipes and vents and, you know, to absorb the heat. Then it hits a heat exchanger and then taps into our water loop, which then removes the heat and takes it outside. So we've seen that. We've had clients that have been wanting to do that. And the way we designed our architecture, we decided we would build our own. So we built one called the DeltaFlow. It's essentially that. It's a CDU and a heat exchanger. And it sits alongside our Delta Cubes in the mechanical corridor and just taps directly into the same water loop. So for us, it's just a plug and play. And for customers who they're in existing space, they want to start moving to high performance compute, we literally just drop one or many of these in and then just plumb into the space however they need it to be. And again, that's still being defined. I sit on the Open Compute Project, OCP, consultant group, and we're looking at liquid to the rack. There's a lot of debate. But fortunately, whatever they want, however they want to take it, we can deliver that.
And have you found since GPT came to the fore that those conversations have been the conversations you're having with customers? You know, like when we have this requirement, how will you as a developer adjust or adapt to that requirement?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of interest. I mean, obviously, the large cloud providers are doing that. They're even machine learning as a service companies that are springing up. A lot of those are pivoting from the Bitcoin mining world. But even our enterprise clients, they're all looking at this. I mean, it's so easy to spin up an instance on whether it's Bard or ChatGPT or anything, to actually start learning how to run AI models. And the model itself is really small. in terms of file size, but it's having it spread across multiple processors that gives it the power. So they're all running at the same time. So once you've got your model, then you can move it and actually bring it in-house and start playing with it and actually deploy that. But be that as it may, enterprise servers are still growing beyond all recognition. And right now, the operating systems, all those things are really geared to run on SIC-based, basically Intel chipset type structure, non-GPT chip structure. That may well change as well. So there's this hybridization of a general CPU and a GPU, and they're being coupled with the new NVIDIA chips, but there's still an awful lot of CPU type workloads that are growing like crazy. Because we are, as I say, we are the engine of the digital economy. And that's not stopping. That's got an incredible exponential curve.
Definitely. And from an aligned perspective and strategic, you know, making those decisions on geographically where you go next, I know you're always been quite centered around a number of locations, but has the change in demands also adjusted your strategic decisions with regards to where you may or have developed over the last few years and in the coming years?
Yeah, well, we've been buying land for a long, long time and banking that. Actually, what's driving that more now is availability of utility power. Because with this growth, with people moving to electric vehicles, the power distribution, not necessarily the generation, but the distribution is struggling to keep up. So we're now looking more for where we can get utility power, or we can bring in alternative power, which we're doing a lot of work with. So that's actually driving that. And our clients are always dictating where they want to be. And there's some other things that are happening with technology that's going to disaggregate the AI module from its learning and its inference, which will be really exciting. So that's going to change things again. But basically, our clients are driving where they want to be, and new clusters of compute sort of developing and have been developing over the last several years. It's sort of moved away from those traditional nine in the States, probably seven or eight in Europe, those big on-ramps, those big cluster points from historical internet perspective.
Yeah, you're definitely seeing it everywhere, aren't you, at the moment? The spread of the industry is happening in all regions. I put a post up today about Saudi Arabia and where it's busy at the moment. Yeah. And I could write this about any region at the moment because the demand's there, the growth's Absolutely. There, the forecasted growth is there. And it's fascinating to watch the spread across everywhere, really.
Yeah.
Another point that comes up quite a lot in my conversations, and you've mentioned it a few times, is the growth and the scale, and how do we actually manage to keep up with the scale and the demand? Because it is insatiable at the moment. You only got to look at the availability rates in most territories, and it's low, and then there's a massive demand for new capacity. Do you think we can keep up, or are we going to get a point where there is a leveling off, I guess, in demand and availability?
Well, I don't think demand's going to drop off anytime soon, but availability is really, if you haven't taken control of your supply chain by now, you're probably in a world of hurt. We started buying our inventory 5+ years ago. We started with, we bought 20 megawatts. So we had 20 megawatts of gens, UPS, switchgear, all of that stuff, long lead items. Now we've got a rolling inventory of about 1.5 gigawatts of mechanical electrical equipment. So for us, we have that. Now it's a case of getting the land, getting the power, and building. Building's pretty straightforward. And we use a very prescribed methodology. We've optimized how we build, the amount of materials that we need. So the cables are much shorter to get the power into the building. Everything's highly optimized to reduce our carbon footprint on that. And we're investigating new materials, zero carbon concrete, all sorts of really interesting things that are coming out. So our ability to flex and shift is there. It's really more a case of securing that growth to power. There's a lot of pockets of power, so we take those And then we work with the utility and the distributors, the utility generators and the distributors to ensure there's a good path there, as well as some alternatives that we're investigating.
Yeah, from a technology perspective, the off-grid conversation is one that comes up all the time as well, isn't it? Which is how do we manage without no power, so to speak? How do we produce our own? How can we create that power? And I'm talking to some startup organizations that are operating in like the renewable space, and it's all linked to data centers now. All of a sudden, they're all very interested in this industry. On that point, do you think that, again, is the feasible solution? Is off-grid where we're going as an industry?
I don't know. It's going to be totally off-grid, honestly, because you still need some. You still need a utility. But to supplement it, I think there's going to be a lot of that. So there's this great book I read like 10, 12 years ago by Nick Carr called The Big Switch. And he talked about how we transitioned to distributed electricity, basically. And that transition from steam power, water power, to electrical power, where people were doing that. And then people like Edison and others, Westinghouse, and similarly in Europe, they started generating electricity and distributing it. I do think there's going to be a switchback to where we do maybe some form of on-site generation or local zone generation. And there's some really interesting technologies that are coming out. Small, medium reactors got a lot of activity. And they don't have to be so restricted by regulation, because they're an older technology that was just mothballed years ago to go the way we go with the light water reactors, which take like 25 years from go to deliver power. And there's hydrogen, which is really interesting. Hydrogen has a lot of potential. It's just moving it around because the molecules are so much smaller. It corrodes the piping, it can escape more. You may have to do on-site fracking or cracking of ammonia. There's natural gas generation. There's so many different ways of doing this. And we're looking at them all, and we're actively engaged in projects doing a lot of this work. But I don't think you'll ever be totally off-grid, because ultimately, I hope, everybody hopes, the utilities will get the funding, they'll ramp up, and they'll get there. And, fusion, that now works. It just is going to take a couple of $1 trillion to get it to scale. But that's a viable option as well. That could change global energy for us if everyone gets behind that.
Yeah, it's going to definitely be exciting to watch that power challenge being solved by much cleverer people than myself. But it's definitely one to watch.
You too.
I was going to ask you what's next for Aligned, and I always joke that Aligned are always in the news. And then yesterday you announced the Blackstone credit facility for your Salt Lake City data center. So listeners, you can check that out. It's in the media now. But equally, what is next for Aligned? I know there'll be something in the news probably within a week or two, because there always is. But what's the future look like for you as an organization?
Well, last year we acquired a South American company, OData, so we're driving down there. We invested in a company in Canada, QScale. They focus on high-performance compute. We're just going to focus on the Americas, build differently, build better, build faster. And again, carbon footprint's important to us. We've always had sustainability at our heart, and we're actively looking at how we can reduce that footprint, so that we can work with our clients and they can report that as their scope 3. Because it's really, there wasn't a good methodology to do that. So everyone sort of ignored it. But we've got some programs in place to do that. And we're working with all our big clients on that and various industry bodies to move that sort of forward. So not only delivering more, building more. I mean, I think we've got like 17 building projects going on right now. And there's a full pipeline behind that. So more and more and more. But again, everything's about adaptability, because as we said, GPUs are great. They're fantastic. They're driving a huge spike. Let's see what happens with the OS layer and the application layer. Because again, that might shift a whole other way of doing business. And if you're designing for today, even if you're designing for next week, that might not be good enough for next month or next year. So adaptability is key. So I can't really give you any predictions because we might change it. So, you know.
Like I said, aligned are always in the news anyway. So there's always something to, there's always something happening. We know that. As I always say when I interview you guys, I love your organization. And it's always a great company to watch because I do feel like you are on the cusp always. There's always a clue in what you're doing with regards to where the market's going. So it's a keep an eye on them is all I'd say. If you're listening, make sure you follow Aligned on LinkedIn or check out their website. Before I let you go, just a couple of quick fire questions. You covered some of these already, so we might duplicate the answers, but it'd be good to get your insight. 2024, we're middle of March now, already a quarter of the way through, but challenges, power, we've talked about, but is there anything else you see as being an industry challenge this year?
There's getting good workforce. Obviously, as we grow, we need to have more people. So we're very active with internships. We have a great program for our operations team. We focus a lot on ex-military because there's that discipline, and you can transition that discipline of running a system, running a process to running a data center. Just getting more people involved. We have a great supply chain. We have a great financial backing, as you mentioned. That's really interesting as well. I think that we're going to see some consolidation in the market. I'm not giving it away. I think that's just going to happen. The cost of money's gone up a bit. There's a lot of spin-up companies that sort of came out with investment money. I think a lot of those are going to be folded into bigger entities like ourselves and others. That's just inevitable. Because you've got to have financial backing that's got a long-term play. This isn't a short-term return on investment program. I mean, there's a lot of money in it, but it's a long-term play. So unless you've got the appetite to do that, there's going to be cash out. So I think you're going to see more of that. So getting more people involved in the industry, we're actively involved in lots of different programs and policies with universities and colleges and high schools in every region that we're at, and just getting more people involved. That's what we would realize. So that's what I'm looking for, a good influx of interest of people coming into the industry.
Definitely. We need people. I think we needed people when I started doing this in 2020, and we need even more people now. So anyone that's interested, please get in touch. We're happy to have that conversation. If you could ask everyone in the sector to start or stop doing one thing, what would it be?
I think I would have them start looking at these alternative energy providers because some of the companies are fairly small and they need investment. So, I mean, it's great we're doing a lot of work with them, but it shouldn't be just us. It should be everybody. And I do think, I mean, I'm very excited about the potential of fusion, but it's going to take an awful lot of money to do that. So I don't know whether some of our clients wanted to invest in that. That would be great. I would really encourage that. But don't stop using your phone. Keep using your phones. That's that just drives the business.
Exactly. Well, my children drive it, I think. So I don't think we have to worry about
thank you very much
about that one. Exactly. I'll give a pat on the back when I get home. Final question. We did ask you this on the previous episode, and we will direct people to that one as well if you want to learn a bit more about Phil's career and how he got to where he is. But if you could give one piece of advice to anyone looking to work in the sector, what would it be?
Oh, just jump in now. Look at everybody's websites. We're all hiring. So everything from selling to brand strategy to engineering to development design. This is an ecosystem that covers so many facets. And you can pretty much, whatever your skill set is or interest, you'll find a place in this marketplace for sure. So reach out, look at the websites. We all have the hiring or job vacancies thing. Look, reach out, contact me, look at my LinkedIn profile, contact me, and I'll put you in touch with our HR team or contact them directly.
Exactly, yeah. Come and find us. And if you can't find Phil, I'll happily direct you. Thanks for your time, Phil. It's always great to connect. Hopefully it's not 3 years before we do this again. I'm sure it won't be, but there'll be a lot more news to come over the next few months, I'm sure. If anyone does want to reach out, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Easiest way is go to LinkedIn. Find me on LinkedIn and just send me an IM.
Yeah, and we'll share your details when we release the episode. But thanks for your time. I know you're very busy. Enjoy the rest of your day over there in the US, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you. Thanks for this. Speak to you soon.